So this text that we have been covering for the past few weeks is called Mana Shodhanam. Mana means mind. Shodhanam means purity of the mind, purification of the mind. Now, why do we need to purify the mind and what are the impurities of the mind? We'll be talking next week about the impurities in more detail, but briefly, they are the negative qualities, anger, greed, jealousy, selfishness, hatred. And why do we need to remove them? Well, first of all, of course, you know, one wants to be a good person. But for a spiritual seeker, one who wants to evolve spiritually, know who I am, know who is God, what is God, what is my relationship with God, and also what is my relationship with this world, for all of that, mental purification is very necessary. You may go to the church every Sunday. You may sit down and pray and meditate. You may do all kinds of rituals and go on pilgrimages and so on. But unless your mind is pure of these negative tendencies and of the agitations and disturbances which are caused by these negative, like anger and so on, unless your mind is pure, all your efforts will be in vain. So the teachers tell us that people won't say, I want to sit down and meditate, teach me how to meditate. But unless your mind is pure, your meditation will not be fruitful. Does not mean that you wait till, okay, I'm going to wait another 10 years till I get myself rid of all greed and jealousy. As you are meditating and as you are working, the two processes help each other. You work on purification and then you work on prayer and then you work on meditation. So it's a simultaneous process. So the last 2 weeks, we talked about, first of all, they said that there are various methods to get to purify the mind, like pilgrimage, going on pilgrimages, going to holy places, doing charity, doing penance, you know, rituals, prayers. Those are all very good. But the best means, the most powerful means, and the most important means in any spiritual journey is knowledge. So unless I have the right knowledge, I'll not be able to progress. It's like I want to go to Los Angeles. Unless I have the GPS and unless my car is tuned up, you know, I'm not going to be able to reach. So the GPS is the knowledge that we get from the scriptures and from the teachers and from the gurus. And the tuning of the car is the purification of the mind, where just as my oil should be clean, the gasoline should be right, the engine should be. So similarly, my mind has to be purified and cleaned so that it can undertake this spiritual journey. So then last week we talked about inquiry, the path of inquiry and the path of knowledge. And they say, why should you inquire? They say you need to have the right knowledge and you need to inquire. Why do I need to inquire? He says, why inquiry? The teacher has said, you need to do this. I'm just going to do it blindly. It's written in the Bible. It's written in the Quran. It's written in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm just going to follow it. Why do I need to inquire? Why do I need to question? Does that mean I don't have faith in the Lord's teachings? Jesus said it, or don't I have faith in that? So we say that's not the point. It's not that you do not have faith in the scriptures. Faith is the number one requirement for a spiritual seeker. But the faith has to be accompanied by knowledge. Otherwise, it becomes blind faith. When you only have faith in what is said and you don't think about it, you don't have understanding, then that leads to fanaticism, that leads to violence, that leads to destructive tendencies, because I just believe blindly and I don't think about what is said. So we say that faith in the scriptures has to be accompanied by the right understanding of what the prophet or the teacher or the guru meant when he or she wrote the scriptures. So the right understanding along with faith only will take you to the highest. So inquiry will give me this right understanding. Just as I have read some books about physics written by Einstein or some other great physicist, and they have written some theories, and I say I accept them theory blindly. is not going to do you any good. You have to understand it. You have to make it a part of your thinking. You have to apply those theories. Only then that knowledge will become your knowledge. Otherwise, it's Einstein's knowledge or Oppenheimer's knowledge. So similarly, the scriptures are Jesus' knowledge or Buddha's knowledge or Swami Chinmayananda's or Shankaracharya's knowledge. For it to become my knowledge, I have to think about it. I have to inquire. So that is number one. Then we say that on this spiritual path, like in any other journey in life, you need self-effort. Say you want to learn how to swim, and say there is a river you need to cross. So your teacher gives you all the instructions. Okay, you do like this, and you swim like this, and backstroke, and you know, butterfly, and all those things he teaches you. And even in a small pool, you know, he has held your hand, and you know, kind of shown you how to swim. But then ultimately, you have to take a plunge in that river and go across. At that time, the teacher cannot swim and push you or hold you or carry you. If the teacher does, then you are never going to learn. The teacher says, okay, I have taught you, now you're on your own. And if the teacher has confidence in himself and in the student, he'll say, okay, go ahead, you are ready now. So while I am swimming, the teacher will be standing on the bank and encouraging me. Okay, I have given you this knowledge, go ahead. That time, all I have with me is the teacher's knowledge, my own self-effort, and then the third one is Lord's grace. So the third thing is Lord's grace. And the Lord's grace is everywhere. It's not that the Lord selectively showers his grace on certain individuals. The Lord's grace is available for all. The one who opens his heart to the Lord and remembers the Lord with love and affection and surrenders his or her ego to that almighty power, that grace is available for him. I have given this example many times. There is a fireplace in one corner. The room is very cold, but there's a warm fireplace. And one individual, she sits close to the fire and enjoys the beauty of the fire. Another one sits in that corner and keeps saying, the room is so cold, the room is so cold. And the fire, the fire is so partial. It is showering its grace on that woman who is, you know, sitting there. And it's why does it favor her and why not me? It's very obvious, you know, this example, but that is how we are with the Lord. We do not approach the Lord with love, with surrender, with adoration. And you will not get the grace unless you go close to the Lord. If you stay far away and say, I don't believe in him, I don't care, I never think about him, how are you going to get his grace? So it's not that he's partial or favors others. It is we that don't open our heart. If you don't open your heart, how can his grace flow in? So today we are going to talk about impurities, why we should remove the impurities. The first thing is to know who I am. Now people may praise me. They may say, oh, you are the most wonderful person. You are such a nice person. You know so much. And you are so good and you are so kind. But only I know really who I am. Sometimes people even start believing what others are saying about them. You know, people, they keep praising somebody and it goes to his head, you know. And if I accept what others think about me, then I'm creating a false image of myself. The image may fool others, but sometimes it even starts fooling themselves because they themselves start believing what the people are saying. So they say the first thing is you have to know who you are. You have to know, and everybody truly, if you do a true self-inquiry, you know who I am. I know what are my faults. I know what are my errors. I know what are my difficulties. I know what I'm doing wrong. I know what I'm doing right. If people don't respect me or love me, I know why. I know why I'm not loved. I know why I'm not respected. I know why people don't care for me. Talking about respect reminds me of Rodney Dangerfield. Of course, most of you must have heard of him. But recently I was reading some wonderful jokes about his, about that he says, I don't get no respect. That is his most famous line. So some of the jokes I was reading. It's very nice. He says, when I was born, the doctors came and told my parents, we tried everything, but he still survived. Then it is said that, he said, I was kidnapped. I was kidnapped, and the kidnapper sent a note. If you don't send us $5,000, we will send him back. And then once he said, I was so depressed, and I don't get any respect. So he said, I was on the 10th floor, and I was ready to jump. And a whole crowd gathered because I was on the balcony. And they sent a doctor up, you know. So doctor came up running. And he came behind me, and he said, on your marks, get set. So we don't get respect, or we are not happy, or we have too many problems in life. People don't love me. Nobody cares for me. Why? Because I have so many negativities. Maybe I have too much anger, or I have too much greed, or I have too much selfishness. I don't share what I have with others. I try to get what doesn't belong to me, you know, in business, in, you know, in so many ways. So they say that, first of all, know exactly who you are. And one by one, enumerate the impurities. Because none of us is perfect. If we were perfect, we would be God, or we would be Jesus, or we would be Buddha. But the fact that I am still here, and the fact that I am still ignorant, and the fact that I am still suffering in the world, I have problems, that means I have certain impurities, I have certain negativities. I have certain tendencies that I either was born with or I acquired in this lifetime, which are preventing me from realizing the truth, which are preventing me from, even though the teacher says, you are that spirit, you are that consciousness, we are, all of us are that divine manifestation of that one divine entity that they call Father in heaven or Brahman. Even though we are all created from that one divinity, why are we so different? Why is there some people who are so beautiful and so saintly, and then there are some others who are so mean and horrible? So it says enumerate your impurities. Unless you know who you are, you are not going to be able to eliminate them. So knowing my impurities is half the battle. That's what they say. Understand your impurities. And we talked already about why should I eliminate, because we said in the beginning that for spiritual progress. So they say understand your impurities one by one. Once you have a problem, and as Swamiji also in his commentary says that a physical problem you can remove. Say I have a headache, I can go take Tylenol. If I have, you know, a dirt on my body, it's not clean, I can go take a bath. You know, if there is some, you know, some rash, I can put medicine. But the psychological impurities, the problems of the mind, cannot be removed just by physical action. There is no how. People come and say, like Swamiji says, how can I get rid of my anger? Or how can I get rid of, or like he very, very funnily he says, you tell them, I have conquered anger. You go tell your friends, I have conquered anger. And the friend comes and tells you, you are the epitome of anger. I have never seen a more angry person than you. How would you say you have conquered anger? You immediately get angry with that person. What do you mean? You start screaming. So right away your theory failed. You know, the fact that you thought. So it says that understand the impurities, understand the negativities that I have. How did they arise? Where did they come from? What is their source? Because unless you know the source of the problem, you cannot overcome the problem. So they say the first thing is, once you recognize, okay, I have this problem. I have this problem of anger or greed, or selfishness, or jealousy, or hatred, or prejudice, or looking down on people, or talking insultingly, or, you know. So we all know that. Either we know it or sometimes a well-wisher might come and tell you. Usually it is the wife. She will all she will always point them out very, very faithfully. At least mine does. So ask your wife or your spouse or your teacher, you know, your spiritual teacher, your guru. You know, so they say that you start by first recognizing that you have the problem, and half the battle is won once you recognize that I have this problem. So this is first start by identifying the problem, by admitting it. Because what we do is we deny it. Like we'll say, I don't really have this problem. Or we will justify, you know, everybody is human. Nobody is perfect. If everybody was perfect, we would all be God. So it's okay, you know, once in a while to, you know, to cheat a little or lie or steal or be get angry. It's okay. What can I do? I'm helpless. Oh, we say I'm helpless. That's another way. I just can't do it. That's how I am. I'm an angry person, you know. And so either we justify by justifying it, or we say, it's okay, you know, I can't do it. Or we express our helplessness. Look, I tried, I just can't do it. So that's the number one. Okay, you know, I believe. A second thing that some people do is start justifying, you know. You know what? In this world, you have to be angry. Otherwise, as a boss, if I don't get mad at my employees, you think they will work? No, they won't work. They're all lazy. They are all this. They are only there to punch the clock. I have to sit on their head, and I have to discipline them. And so people will justify, or if they have too much greed or ambition, they will say, you know what? This world is a cutthroat place. Everybody's out to cut my throat. And if I'm not watchful, if I'm not watching my back, they will stab me in the back. So I have to be competitive. I have to step on people's head and climb up. How do you think all these rich people, how do you think they became rich? By stealing from others, by stepping on people's head, by... So we justify our negativity. It's okay. You know, I have to be successful, I have to do that. In this world, you have. So either we accept our errors and faults and say it's okay, or we even make it as a matter of pride, like a medal that we carry on there. You know, like people carry a medal. They say that they carry a medal, you know, of their negativities and brag to the whole world. So we say that problems are there in everybody, negativity is there in everybody. But unless you have a strong desire to eliminate them, it's not going to happen. It's not easy, because these negativities that we have built up, these vasanas or these negative tendencies or these habits, take years and years to build up. And then if you, of course, believe in rebirth or reincarnation, then it is lifetimes of accumulation of dirt. And so in each life, we have certain, you know, things that we are born with. And so it takes a serious amount of effort. I have to decide that from today onward, I'm not going to get angry. You know, they say, oh, by counting up to 10 or by taking a cold shower, those are all external things. But once I realize the reason, why do I get angry? Why was I selfish? Or why was I mean to that individual? So go to the root of the problem. Go to the source of the problem. And the source of all the problems is ignorance. Not knowing that I am a divine individual. And the answer to this question will be covered in the next few verses. Today I was just mostly emphasizing about the... So first of all, go to the source where the problem arose and work at the source. Do not treat the symptoms. Like if you want to water the plants, you know, you must have heard the story about that little girl used to every day water. Her mother had told her, water the rose bush. And she would just water the leaves, you know, just sprinkle water on the leaves every day. And the rose bush died. And the mother said, what happened? You know, how did this rose... She said, oh, every day I used to wash the leaves. She says, yeah, but you have to water the root. unless you do that. So similarly, for a problem to be handled, you have to go to the root. By treating the surface, like they say, do not treat the symptoms. Similarly, if you go to a doctor and you tell him, I have these symptoms of fever and headache and, you know, nausea and stomach pain and all, he or she will try to go to the cause. They're not going to just say, okay, take 2 Tylenol and call me in the morning, even though that is what most people believe. But, you know, we try to go to the root of the problem, the cause. Why did this problem arise? So we put all the symptoms together and then come up with a suitable diagnosis. So similarly, all these negativities that I have one common diagnosis. And so I have to go to the root of the problem. I have to know why the problem arises, what triggers these negative things to, you know. So one has to become very conscious and become very alert that when these negative things arise, if I'm conscious about it, then even when somebody or some, like they say, you know, he presses my wrong button, you know, the moment he says something, it makes me angry. So you have to become alert. Our founder, Swami Chinmayananda, said, do not put the key of your happiness in somebody else's pocket. That if that person wants, he can turn the key and make you angry or make you sad or make you miserable or make you unhappy. So why do you let another person control your emotions, control your life, control your thoughts and get you upset? So be alert about the triggers that trigger these negative tendencies. So that's what they say, that know the source, know how they arise. And the majority of the battle is overcome then. But then irrespective of all this happening, even if something negative you did or said, then of course there are, which we'll be covering more in the next few weeks, but there are things like, you know, asking for forgiveness, either from the Lord or from that person, and becoming alert that, okay, I made this mistake one time, but I'm not going to make it again. So there are many processes, many steps to be taken. So that is what the essence of today's talk is, that the best way, the only way, the most important way to remove impurities of the mind is through right knowledge. All the other things will help. You know, prayer will help, and charity will help, and, you know, meeting with saints and going on pilgrimages and doing some, you know, going to the church and all. But the one and the only and the most powerful means is knowledge. So that's what they say, that through right knowledge, which they have talked about in the 8th and 9th verse, and today in the 10th verse, we talked about the how to recognize these impurities and how to overcome them, or how to at least start the process, which will be covered in more detail in the next few verses. We forgot to chant the verse, sorry, so we'll do that. I got so caught up in the talk, there was so much I had to say. So we'll chant that verse number 10. And then we'll make it open for questions or comments. So verse number 10, page 21.
Etad bhagvato vakyam swatma shuddhyaika siddhaye swatma shuddhyaika siddhaye vicharyate maya samyak Shri Harir me prasidatam.
So he says these words of the Lord, which were in the 9th chapter, that one has to have the knowledge to purify the mind. I am now going to inquire, vicharyate. It will be thought about. I will inquire why. Swatma shudhyaika siddhaye. To purify my mind, I have to inquire, I have to get the right knowledge. So that is what I'm going to do. That now the Lord has said that you need to purify your mind. And the Lord has also told me that knowledge is the best means to purify the mind. So now I am going to begin the process of purification by inquiry, by getting the right knowledge. And Hari Shri Harir Me Prasidatam, and may the Lord bless me. So you are invoking the Lord's grace, as we said in the number 3, that you have to have the Lord's grace, you have to surrender. So here the author of this book says that I am now going to inquire into the cause of these problems, and may the Lord bless me, may the Lord be with me. So that is what this verse was about, and I have tried to summarize it and enumerate it and try to expound a little bit on this beautiful commentary. Of course, most of what I spoke was from this commentary that is in the book. So everyone should try and read the book, at least before you come, the verse, or when you go home today, read the commentary. So that will reinforce the knowledge. So everybody should have this book. Then only this class will make sense. Otherwise, you really won't be able to connect one talk with another. What did he say last week, and what did I say this week?
Have you heard that verse? Is it just by
Yes, I think that's what we have been talking about in the past few years, and we will continue to. But Justin, of course, it takes a long time to understand and apply that. We also have several books in the bookstore you can read. Also, in this also the teacher has covered, but the scriptures say that you are the Spirit, what they call as the Holy Spirit, what Jesus calls as. So each one of us is that Spirit. We are a part of that total consciousness. In fact, so they say you are nothing but that consciousness. Who at this moment, the consciousness or the Spirit or that divine being, that is who we really are. And that is, I mean, of course, this can be explained in, it takes hours to explain and years to understand, but just in a 2-minute summary. So I am that divine creature, the divine being. I am Jesus, I am Buddha, I am Shankaracharya, I am Father in heaven. Like Jesus said, I am the Father in heaven. But at this moment, I am covered by negative vasanas, the dirt of the mind, all this jealousy, and also the ignorance, which is also from lifetimes of ignorance. So, and the reason I am not able to experience it, that because of all that dirt. So as I purify my mind, as I make my mind cleaner, as I make my mind pure, and the more I remember God, the more I love Him, the more I remember Him, then also the more I give of myself to others, the more I share. And through reading the right books, slowly that ignorance gets removed. And that dirt of ignorance, which has taken so long, it's like if the window is covered with black paint, it's not going to go away like that. You have to, you know, put some solution and then clean it and scrape it, and it might take you. So after years of effort, I will slowly come to experience that divinity. But it's not that it will take me years to enjoy that. As I am on the spiritual path, as I am purifying the mind, you will experience that joy. You will experience that inner peace. As you meditate, you will experience that inner peace and bliss. And so slowly and slowly that experience will become more stronger, will become more profound. And then you will discover that I am that. What the scripture has said, what the teacher has said, you and I don't feel it yet because we have not reached it. But through the right application of this knowledge, eventually that experience will become your experience. It won't be Jesus' experience. It won't be Buddha's or Shankaracharya's. It will be your experience, your knowledge. So you are that divinity. Right now you have heard it, but after a while you will begin to experience it. So that is called self-realization or God-realization. That is called self-actualization. That is called spiritual evolution. To experience my oneness with God, God who is in my heart as life, to experience my oneness with that power, that I am that. So that is the... Yeah, no, but it starts out by knowing that I am that Spirit. I am that divinity. I am an immortal divine soul. I never die. This body will die. I am at this moment occupying this body. You know, my name is Diana, or my name is Stafford, or my name is Anil. I'm a male or a female, I'm a, you know, white or a Mexican or Italian, I'm a teacher or a doctor or an engineer, I'm a mother or a father or a housewife or child, whatever I am, those are all the roles I play, those are all the upadis, those, they're all the labels given to me by society. You are a mother, you are a woman, you are an American, you are a housewife, you are a, you know, teacher, you are an engineer, you are smart, you are in, you know, dumb, you, those are all names given. Your body is like that, you're, you know, you're a blonde. So all those things have been given to us, labels have been placed upon this spirituality, upon this spirit. And so these labels have to be slowly removed. You remove these labels, and as you remove the labels one by one, you come to experience that. And meditation is the fastest way to experience that, that reality. So through meditation and through right understanding is the fastest way to the truth, to self-realization. At least that's my experience. I have been trying to meditate for, I think, since 95, so about 17 or 18 years. And I find it has helped me a lot, and that's why I try to share it with everybody. Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, the answer has been given by Eckhart Tolle in his book, The Power of Now. I read that many years ago, but this is one of the things I picked up from it. That if you are in a negative situation, say with an employee, with a coworker, or with a boss, or a spouse, or somebody, you know. So there are three ways to handle it if the situation is negative. First of all, before you do any of those three, you first of all start out by looking within and say that, is there anything in me that is creating that? So you first try to analyze without blaming yourself or without putting yourself down, that maybe there is some deficiency in me. So, okay, you have eliminated that. I didn't do anything wrong, and which is fine. So then there are three alternatives. Once you have removed that first one, that I am not at fault, I am not to blame. So I'm faced with a negative situation. So first one is to walk away from it. Like you said, leave. Say I resign the job, or I get a divorce, or I move away from the neighborhood if there's a neighbor or a coworker and whatever. I change my department. So that is one. You walk away from the situation. But say I cannot walk away. You know, I need the job. There's only one room. That coworker is always there, or my neighbor is always there, or my spouse I can't afford, or I can't leave, or whatever the children say. So one is you walk away. Second is you try to stay in that situation and change it. Say if I have a boss, I can go talk to the boss, or if I have a negative person, I talk to them in a non-accusing, non-confrontational way. You sit down and at a nice, choose a good moment and talk to that person. And try to fix that situation within the same situation. Say if there is one employee who is very bad and all the employees are angry with her, then maybe you can go talk to the boss or the personal manager or whatever. So either walk away or stay in the situation and fix it. But say you can't do that even. Like my boss, I cannot resign the job because I need, jobs are hard to get. And there is no way, if I go talk to the boss, he'll fire me. So I cannot change it. I cannot walk away. And the third and the most important, which works in every situation, is accept it as it is 100%. Without any resentment, without any passive aggressive. A lot of times we accept something, but inside we have a lot of resentment towards that person. I have to live with this person, but I'm unhappy, but I'm going to accept it because I don't have a choice. So inside you are still resenting, so you have that passive aggressive, and that negativity that you retain for that person will come out. But if you accept that person 100%, okay, he is like that, I accept him, and even though he, despite all those things, I still accept him, I still don't hate him, I still don't see the divinity in that, that there is a Lord in this person, even though at this moment he's not acting. So when you accept the person 100% as they are, or accept the situation, it could be a situation, say you have an illness, say you, God forbid, you know, you have get cancer, or you lose a leg, or you are born with some handicap. So that's something you can't change. You can't walk away from it. You can't change it. So you accept the situation as it is. Okay, this is how it is, and I'm fine with it. Once you accept that situation, then two things will happen. One is that you will not be generating negative, input towards the other person, negative messages. And so automatically the negativity will be diffused. Even if it is not diffused, at least I am not upset by it. He wants to be angry, let him go ahead and be angry. He wants to create negativity. Oh Lord, please take care of him. And if that person continues, then ultimately the Lord is there who will take care of him. Because the law of karma comes to everybody. Nobody can escape the law of karma. It's 100%. You do one, you get one. You do two, you get two. You know, you do minus one, you get minus one. So there is no plus, you know, there is no running away. So let the Lord handle it. It's your creation. You created, you deal with it. I have nothing, you know. I talk to God all the time. I talk to him all the time. You talk to him like a friend, you know. God is not somebody to be afraid of. You talk to him like a friend or like a beloved or like a loving father, you know, or like a child. Some people even scold God. What did you do? Don't you know? So it's okay. You know, whatever way, whatever relationship. So have a relationship of love with God and let him deal with it. So once you accept the situation 100% without any inner negativities as it is, automatically it will be diffused. Then you are not, you know, contributing to that. And ultimately, when the person sees that you are calm and you are fine, then his whole joy in getting angry and doing all those things will go down. And you will have definitely a positive, because each and every one of us is responsible for our surroundings. Not only that, but we are responsible for what happens to us. Because through the law of karma, whatever is happening to me, it's I who did it. One has to understand that. And once you accept that, then the problems will be solved. That's what I think. And then, of course, which I personally do myself, for in my life, I do that. Lately, of course, thank God, you know, things haven't been bad, but there were times when I went through some problems and some, you know, difficult situations. And I used to draw a mental line, you know, as I would be driving or sitting somewhere, I would draw a line and then say, okay, this side I have this problem. It's big. Oh, it's a very big problem. So I put it right on top, negative. This problem is bothering me. Then I draw this line. And then on the other side, I start writing about things that are going well. You know, at least I have my health. At least I'm alive. At least my mind is functioning well. At least my body is healthy. And I'm living in America, which is a nice country. And I'm financially well off. And I have my education. Then I have my wife who is so nice. I have my children who are so beautiful. And you add up all those things and you say, oh my God, I have so many beautiful things and there's one little thing is bothering me, then immediately that problem gets lessened. So just make the habit of drawing a mental line. And then that problem won't bother you as much. It's okay, it's there, yeah. But I have all these wonderful things that God has given me and I'm so stupid that I'm not being grateful to him. So when you stop focusing on that and focus on your positives,